Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tyre. E-Range EV tyres are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tyre with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetyres.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E-Tyres.com to find your EV's next set of tyres.
Hello and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast. It's July the 21st, 2023, and this is episode number 172. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about Tesla building the first Cybertruck, Ford F-150 Lightning prices get slashed, and Nissan adopts the Tesla North American charging standard, and of course, much, much more. I'm Dominic Chione, Inside EVs editor and forum moderator. Joining us today is the ebullient Mr. Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the ministerial Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us without a spec dad. Hey there, from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a number of YouTube channels. Hey there, everybody. Good to see you all.
What's up, guys?
Good morning. Good morning.
All right. So I don't know what to start with. Dave, you're like a last minute, just surprise. So what y'all doing up there in I guess you're in Colorado?
I am. Yes. I flew out last night. And what time did you pick me up at the airport? Around 2 a.m.
Oh, yeah, we're both really tired.
Lots of delays and, but I'm here. Yeah, I'm here and looking for a good weekend. Should be a blast.
Right on. All right. So let's start with what we've been driving this week, what we've been doing. So, Tom, you had a video out this week and you've written up an article for it on Inside EVs. Ford Mustang Mach-E Rally to add some spice to the Mach-E lineup. So we talked a bit about this car last week, but then you had this interview with Darren Palmer, and you talked about it a bit there. I don't know if there's any extra information about it that you can tell us.
So not a lot. Ford hasn't really revealed any much on it at all. But the one thing I will take, and I actually recorded this video before the car was introduced. I was going to post this right as the embargo ended. But the problem was Ford had like no video B-roll of the vehicle at all, just some stills. So I wasn't going to post the video without having that. So I actually held back a few days after the embargo ended. And then Ford actually had some video of it at Goodwood, because that's where they introduced it at the Goodwood Festival. So, you know, we didn't learn a whole lot about it. I mean, there's some interesting things. I was surprised to hear that this is the first like official rally car from Ford that has a Mustang badge. I would have thought somewhere along the lines they would have made one, but they never did. It's going to be available to the general public. They're going to put it on sale in the US and Europe. It's not just like a special car that they're going to parade around and take to events like they did the Mustang Mach-E GT or the Mach-E 1400, that like super souped up race car. Right. So this is going to be a customer car. The one thing I will say from the video that we learned, and this actually got a lot of traction on the Mach-E forums, was that, you know, I asked Darren a lot about the thermal throttling and the 5-second limit that Ford has imposed on the vehicles. And he said that they've been working on this a lot. There's a team working on it, and you know, they wanted to make sure that none of the other components would get damaged if they extended that or removed it. And he said they've been testing it for a while now, and they're getting close to being able to release an over-the-air update that's going to make the car perform a lot better and remove some of those thermal restrictions. So that was good to hear.
Right on. Right. Say, Kyle, so this week you had a number of videos, but I want to talk to you first about a video you haven't made yet, or maybe you have and you haven't released it yet. But you recreated or redid your Race to Vegas So I believe last year you did something like this, and you had a group of cars, put together a group of cars and a group of friends and got them in all matched up and then raced them to Las Vegas from Fort Collins, which is like 800 miles, I think. So you've redone this race with different cars. I'm not sure if the people are different, but it looked pretty stunning. There's a few clips on your It's Kyle Connor Twitter handle. You have a few clips and pictures, I think, there. So I don't know. What can you tell us about it? First, maybe tell us what this race is about, because it's not like an all-out race on public roads exactly, right?
Yeah, no, that's correct. We call it Race to Vegas because it sounds exciting, but it is a race in a sense, but we can't go fast. Right. In fact, we're driving slower than normal because we put a 5 mile per hour speed limit cap. So five over, basically.
Okay.
And we took the three big long range fast charging electric cars. We've called them the Holy Trinity of EVs recently. And so basically we had the Tesla Model S Plaid, the Porsche Taycan, and the Lucid Air Grand Touring. And what's interesting is both the Lucid and the Taycan were, you know, opposite ends of the spectrum. The Taycan has less than half the stated EPA range of the Lucid, but fantastic charging curve. It can charge really deep into the battery at very high speeds, whereas the Lucid can go very far in a single charge, but at least in our testing has a pretty weak sauce charging curve. And then the Model S is somewhere in the middle, but has the advantage of the Tesla supercharger network. So we actually have three videos coming on this, one of them launching today, just after this podcast, where we raced on the way out, and then really that we had a little bit of a fail. And then on the return, we had the like craziest outcome you could ever imagine. So it was really fun, really cool. Y'all have to stay tuned to see who won. But really curious to see maybe like what Tom and Martin think about this. Is it a relevant test? Because ultimately we are looking at, you know, we're all cars, same conditions, same roads, and totally different strategies of charging versus range.
Right. What do you think, Tom?
Well, when is that going to go up? You didn't put it out yet, right? No. So the first of three episodes goes up in an hour. Yeah. I mean, I'd like to see it before I make real strong comments on it. But I mean, I think the concept's fantastic. And knowing since you did it, I assume that the you know, how it was done was also proper, because the devil can always be in the details. Do you allow each person to just charge up to whatever percentage they want at each station to leave? Or is there like a formula you have to, you know, when you get to that next charging station, you've got to charge up to have at least 200 miles of range? Or is it just you decide how much you need, how long you need to stay to make it to the next station? Because then you're putting in a human element and somebody else might not be able to calculate that as well as you can. Or how do you do it when you stop to charge?
Yeah, so there's definitely a human element here, but it's why we selected expert EV road trippers who understand how to maximize the cars. So between the three of us, we're pulling in at 0, 1, 2, 3% every time, because each car needs to be maximized pretty much the same way. Right. The Taycan's really the only exception where it makes sense to stay charging deeper into the pack, because it picks up charging speed all the way to 50%. But we you know, basically had expert EV drivers. We maximized the cars as much as possible. And yes, there's a human element. There's a traffic element. It's not just, we're not on instrumented dyno tests, but it's really fun to do this, of course. And then, you know, for more of a realistic, repeatable test, we do our 10% challenges, which, of course, can simulate that road trip range and in pretty repetitive conditions. So yeah, it was a really fun time. And can't wait for you guys to see episode 3, probably sometime end of next week, because that's just the coolest thing we've ever done.
Right on. Awesome.
Kyle, do you guys like record? I guess you do, because you get the email like from Electrify America when you're done. I'd also be, being like a data geek, be interested in seeing how much, how many kilowatt hours each car needed to complete the trip.
Yeah.
You know, that'd be something that I know it's probably not something a lot of people are interested in, but I'd be interested in knowing, you know, how long each vehicle had to charge for, and then how much energy they took in. I think that'd be cool if you could put all that together and summarize it at the end.
Yeah, we have all the data, that and way more. And actually what we'll do is probably a follow-up episode just on the numbers, just on the data for people who don't want to sit through and watch, these hour-long videos. We'll just basically have a quick wrap-up with all the data in there. But everyone's recorded their charging sessions. Everyone recorded their times. Everything was GPS logged as usual. And what's crazy is even now, each one of these three cars is so good in their own right, and there's so many pros and cons to each. I'm not sure really what the fastest one is. It really depends on the route, depends on the charging infrastructure, depends on so much. But I think you guys will enjoy it. So I'm saying too much now, but that was really fun. So we spent the last 2 days going to and from Vegas, and it was great.
Right on. That sounds like just a good time, really. All right. So you had some other videos I want to touch on real quick. I don't know if these are all yours, and some of them we don't want to talk about a whole lot, but I thought you might as well mention them. So you had one interesting last week, because you reminded me to bring my charger with me. Carrying a 40-amp mobile charger is key on any EV trip or adventure. So that was a sponsored video. It was sponsored by a ShockFlow G1 portable EVSE. You use basically products that you like. If you're going to make a video about them, you don't really pick up sponsors who have crappy products, because who wants to sell a crappy product, right? This reminded me, actually. So I went to the beach last weekend and for the weekend, and I almost didn't bring my portable charger. And it just thought, well, mine comes with a Tesla portable one, so that's a whole different thing. But what was it about this one that you liked especially?
Yeah, well, you got it right. It is a sponsored video, but we basically asked for it to play around with first. And it wasn't until after I made the video, actually, that I realized that Tom said this one wasn't UL listed.
Oh.
But so I wouldn't recommend it really for home use. They do offer it, like you can mount this on the wall. But like for the occasional, if you use it 3 or 4 times throughout the life cycle of your car, which is how I use my mobile chargers, I don't think it's going to catch on fire. And it was great. I mean, I've already used it quite a bit more than that, and it's been great. It's hard to find 40-amp mobile EVSEs. They're fairly rare. And this one has a cool readout on the screen that tells you line voltage and currents and all this stuff. And you can derate current right on the unit, which is also fairly rare. So if you're at a campground like this and you blow a campground wide circuit, you can at least turn it down to 16 amps or 32 in your choice. So I enjoyed some of the features. I don't think we need to spend too much time on it. These things are just, I mean, Tom will disagree with me, but they're all pretty much just cables bringing AC to the car. So to me, they're fairly much all the same. But where it really counts is if you're going to be using it every day as your main charging source, that's when you really probably spend up and get a high quality unit. This is on the low, inexpensive, infrequent use end of the spectrum.
So I just have to have my 2 cents. So ShockFlow, of course, reached out. They reach out to, this is the latest thing now with these portable chargers. They don't advertise, they reach out to influencers, and Kyle has enormous presence in this space, EV space. So not surprisingly that they wanted to work with him on this. They reach out to you. They said, we'll send you this. Will you make this? And every company offers a different, what they expect from you. They want you to, they want you to promote their product, basically. Sure. So they sent me this with a list of things, and I wasn't going to do it because it was a paid promotion thing. But so I always respond and say, okay, here's what I'll offer you. Send me the unit. I'll review it. You don't pay me anything. It's not going to be sponsored. I'll review it. And the response was, oh, that's fantastic. You don't need to be paid. Yes. Okay. Then these are our requirements. And one of the requirements was, we need to approve the video first. And I said back, okay, that's not happening. I'll be happy to review your product, but you don't get to approve what I do before I post it. So, unfortunately, we need to approve all the videos before they're put online. So then my response was, that's great. Now you're going to make me buy one. So look forward to my review coming up soon. there's so many of these products coming, particularly from Asia, they're such a varying degree of quality. Now, Kyle is right. As much as I hate to admit, in many instances, he's correct in that if you're going to use this thing once in a while, you can probably get away with a lower quality one that maybe isn't safety certified. And but there are certain aspects of it that you really have to be careful. Like some of them, the plugs themselves, if you just bend them, the wires open up. And even if you're just going to use this occasionally, that it might be in a pouring rain one day. And, you know, you just threw your $150 away for, you know, you could spend twice as much and get one that doesn't happen to. I mean, like the J Plus Booster, which I know Kyle loves, the thing's rock solid. Yeah, it's goddamned expensive. But you could buy that thing. You could drive over it with a freaking tank. And that thing's going to work for you for 10 years. So, you know, my thoughts on this is spend a few extra more bucks and get a really high quality unit that lasts a long time. And okay, this was Kyle's video, but you know me, I can't not respond on charging equipment.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, from our side, right, Tom? It's like we review cars, we don't review mobile EVSEs, so that's how we stay in business. But if you watch the video, you're like, make sure you watch Tom's review whenever it comes out before you buy this unit. Okay. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. That fully sponsored video from our side. I try and be as fair as possible. They didn't ask for any changes in our edit or anything, so it's how I presented it. But definitely, you know, made it clear that it's not the highest quality unit, but also not the highest price.
Yeah.
You're 100% correct. Really love the J Booster as well. But yeah, I've been using this little shock flow thing. To me, they're all the same. You know, until one catches on fire, nothing gets exciting. So you know, it's not there. Nothing's caught on fire yet. I've been waiting.
Hey, Tom.
Yeah, and talking about catching on fire. Sorry, Dave, to cut you off. Give me one second. Yeah. I had a follower recently. I've been communicating with someone who almost had a fire in his house recently, and it was because of a inferior NEMA 1450 outlet. And I'm working with him and his attorneys because he's now involved in a legal issue with the electrician that did the work and the company that built things. And there's a lot of moving parts, but I want to do a video with him and talk about this and show what happened, you know, almost a scare tactic video because so many people are sending me pictures. I see online of people doing it themselves and, you know, wiring their own charging equipment. It's rigged halfway. Oh yeah. My buddy next door, he knows electric and they come over and do it. This is different. Electric vehicle charging, I know I said a million times, is different than anything else. You want to have them come over and do your ceiling fan? That's fine. Hire somebody that knows what the hell they're doing with EV charging, because you're pulling more power when you charge your car than your house and probably the two or three houses next to you is all coming through that one outlet. And that's when really bad things happen. So,
and for a sustained period of time, right?
For many continuous hours, that's when things really heat up. So, yeah. But yeah, I might have a cool, interesting video coming up at some point soon where I actually talk to somebody who's nearly had a house fire because of something was done poorly. And you could see some pretty graphic pictures of what happened in his house. So do things right, buy good safety certified, UL listed quality charging equipment, and you'll be good.
Right on. Hey,
sorry, so Dave was going to say something.
Sorry.
Before.
Yeah, Dave.
No, I was just going to say, Tom, when I put in my level two into my garage, you know, I had the choice of hardwiring it, having an electrician hardwired, or just putting in a NEMA 1450 and then getting the one that you can plug into the wall. And part of my thinking when I did that was I thought, well, I could take that thing with me someday if I'm going up to the mountains, you know, up to Vermont or what have you, and plug that in. And so, you know, to me, I kind of killed two birds with one stone that way. It's just thought I'd add it in there. So
and it's right. And you know what? For years, I recommended people do that. For many years, I said, you know, get the plug-in units. You can take them with you where you go. But then I also had so many of my followers tell me that they did that under that premise. Oh, yeah, I'll take it with me. And then like 4 years later, I've never taken this thing with me. It just stays there because I have a portable unit or something. So it's almost like you're creating, you're using an excuse that then just never materializes. And that would be my recommendation. Hardwire it, get it done right, and then get a good high quality portable charger, Dave, to keep in the back of your car. So you always have it with you. So, I mean, that's.
And then you could be like me and have a professional hardwire and EVSE, you know, professionally done. And then it explodes twice in your garage.
Yeah. So, well, there's professionals and there's professionals. I have so many electricians. First of all, this person I'm talking about, Kyle, with this video, he had it done by a licensed electrician. And but there's a number of things we're going to talk about that he did wrong, because he didn't take into consideration that this device was different than anything else he wired in the house. And he just wired it as if it was a regular outlet for something else. And you just can't do that with EV charging. We need the code changed.
There has to be special
code for EV charging. We need breakers that are different breakers that are higher, like industrial grade breakers for your service panel. We can't use these. Levitin sells a NEMA 1450 outlet on Amazon for $8.88. You're nuts if you put that in your house. It's definitely going to melt. It's just a matter of time.
Are the rules state level or federal? What is it there?
Well, it could be national code is what I'm talking about, an NEC code change. But then individual municipalities and states can also have their rules that override it, because NEC is just kind of like a guideline. The individual municipalities can make their own rules and regulations. So, but it definitely needs, you know, yeah, I was an electrician, you see, with Jumpa, and even I didn't torque it down enough. All the because you have such continued use at high power, what happens is, what we're seeing is the screws are backing out of these outlets. Right. And especially if you use copper wires, aluminum wire, which is what happened with this gentleman, because aluminum expands and contracts 30% more than copper. So, if you don't torque it to the manufacturer spec, which most electricians don't, we know that. I can guarantee you the guy who did Kyle's work, you know, just was like, yeah, that's tight enough. You know what I mean? And it might have needed another 50 pounds. And then those screws backed out and it arced and torqued. I think that's what happened with Kyle's, judging from the pictures that he had posted. But,
We're pretty hardcore on regulations over here in terms of a smaller country, you know, et cetera. And so we've only got one set of rules and everyone has to stick to them. And it's pretty well enforced. The training is very good. There's lots of training around electric vehicle installations now. Of course, an entirely different system to you guys. We use 240 volts, not 120, but still, there's no excuse for not using best practice, which is known around the world now. So I know a little bit about installing EV chargers through friends and relatives and what have you, and all the regulations seem to be pretty hardcore over here. I wonder if it's different to where you are as well. So yeah, it's interesting.
And Brandon put up a good point in the comment section. There's another thing I recommend. If you do have outlets, maybe once a year, shut the breaker off, open it up, get in there, crank them down again. Make sure they're all nice and tight. That's good. That's something that you can do maintenance on an NEMA 1450, particularly if you're pulling its maximum current, if you're pulling 40 amps. Now, you could be pulling 20 amps, 24 amps on it. It's a lot less stress. But if you're pulling the full 40 amps and you have a big battery, so you're charging for 6, 7, 8 hours a day, a couple times a week, even with copper wire, even with proper torquing, they still could back out. So get in there, shut your breaker off, wait a minute or two, get in there and crank them down a little bit. And, you'll say, and you might open, I've people open them up to crank them down and see the outlets already starting to burn and arc and everything. And all right, now, you know, you've cut off, you were going to have a problem.
Mm-hmm. Deathpuck was asking, any recommendation on how often to have the plug checked by an electrician? You said like once a year, you think is fine?
It depends on how much use you have. You know, to be honest with you, normal EV charging once a year. But if you have, like I have a Lightning, if I drove 100 miles a day with my Lightning and was charging at a NEMA 1450, yeah, I'm going to be a lot of hours of charging. I would do it every, you know, three times a year, maybe every 4 months, something like that. But I mean, that is something most people can do. You know, it's not that hard. As long as you know you shut your breaker off.
Yeah, that's important.
Two screws on the cover, you take it off, and then you just look at the connections on the side. You can get in there and crank them down.
Right. All right, right on. Well, thanks for that. I mean, that was a great discussion on chargers just because of, you know, that one sponsor video. So that's cool. Kyle, you had this other video on this other channel. I'm not sure if you've even watched this video, but it was pretty remarkable. So on out-of-spec detailing, Colton had a very close-up look at the Tesla Model X Plaid. The title of the video is Tesla Model X Plaid is a Build Quality Nightmare, and you can see it on your screen here if you're watching this on YouTube. This thing, oh man, did you watch this?
No, I haven't seen it, but I have talked to Colton about it. I've seen the car in person, And I mean, like looking at the car in person, it like looked really good. There was one issue I saw, which is when the door opened, it cracked the roof glass.
That's a bit of an issue.
Yeah, but, but like warranty. So like, you know, I'm one that like when you buy a Tesla, just like expect the worst.
Okay. And
if you don't get wet when you go through the car wash, you got lucky.
Okay. Well, I thought it was pretty interesting because, you know, like just the glass should not crack just by opening your doors, like using your doors.
Is that Colton's main issue with it?
It was janky all over.
Okay. Yeah. That's what he was explaining to me, was just like, yeah, lots of weird little things. The spoiler had like the weirdest paint quality on it. I saw that. That was really bad. Yeah. I don't think anyone expects Model X to be perfect. This shouldn't be a shock to anyone.
Right.
This is probably the least best built Tesla that they make out of the four models currently in production. And we've seen some really bad ones. My Model S is an example of probably not a good one at all. And so, you know, it just rattles everywhere and stuff like that. So granted, the car's lived a rough life. But yeah, 3 and Y seem to be built really solid, is my impression.
Right.
But S and X, especially X, not so great.
And we've seen good X's before too. It's not like everyone's a nightmare, you know. But
Of them,
well, I mean, I've seen some that looked fine to me. You know, I didn't go over them like Colton does, of course. But you know, and if, I think if they were all breaking their glass, I mean, opening the doors, I think that we'd probably hear about that.
Yeah, okay, so like that doesn't actually really bother me because it's not happening in mass numbers, this glass breaking. Every car will have, you know, you'll have some manufacturer defect in a small portion. It's more like, why is the whole car not put together or painted well? They've been building Model X forever. That should have been dialed in by now.
Right, yeah. Some of those, I mean, I looked at the video, the first part of the video, and some of those things, I'm like, how does that leave the factory like that? But yeah. Right. So let's move along then. So you had another video. This is really quick. Max hosted this one, Apple Maps versus Google Maps for electric car routing. He uses the Polestar 2, which he has against, I forget what he had in, was it the Mustang, I think, with the Apple. Right. And I guess, and that's up there if you want to watch that for now. I think the Polestar came out on top on that, but he did say there's a good improvements coming to the with OS 17, Apple's operating system, that will help with route planning for EVs.
Yep.
But anything else you want to add to that?
Nope.
All right. Carl picked me up in a Polestar 2 last night from the airport.
Okay.
And, you know, and I was checking out the Google Maps and the way that it's integrated into the car and things like, you know, arrival SOC, state of charge on arrival. Mm-hmm. It, you know, he was telling me a little bit about it. When I rented one out in California, I don't know. I didn't really know how to use it as well, but he was explaining it to me last night. I was pretty impressed with the Google Maps integration into the Polestar.
Yeah. Like we had a 3% state of charge arrival predicted to get back home. And I was able to, like, it was just perfect because it saw how I drove on the way there when I drove the same way on the way back. I mean, it was middle of the night, no one was on the road. So just pegged at, you know, high speed and then pulled in here at 3% what it said. Like, why is that hard for other electric cars to do so well?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's what Tesla does, right? You can really kind of get a good idea that you're going to, if it says you're going to arrive with 7%, you're arriving with, you know, 5 to 8%, probably 5 to
9. Yeah, well, this one was even better than Tesla, in my impression. And I've noticed the same actually with the GM cars as well, with Hummer EV that I've driven, as well as Silverado EV, with these Google built-in systems. They have fantastic route planning and they have really good state of charge on arrival prediction.
Right on.
Yeah, don't they take into account like things like elevation?
Yeah, most cars do. Yeah,
but does Tesla? Sure.
Tesla does.
Yeah. Oh, it does. Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think it's something that the Apple app doesn't do yet. So,
right. Yeah, the apps are still pretty primitive.
Right. All right. So, and you also had another video up on with that Max and Alyssa hosted together. Ford Mustang Mach-E versus Tesla Model Y, a buy-in comparison. So this is pretty interesting. I don't know if you've watched this whole thing. And these are really two closely matched cars. And yeah, and each of them, you know, chose their favorite app at the end of it. And they each chose different vehicles. So I thought it was pretty neat. So if you're interested in either of those two cars, I think this is a good video to check out from I don't know. Do you want to pitch this a little harder, Kyle? No.
No, okay. No. I don't think it's worth really talking about the guide channel since we just do daily uploads on that. So anyone interested in the very basics of EV, right, can check mm-hmm. out that channel. It's not really for the audience of this podcast, I don't think.
This is true. We have some pretty nerdy watchers on our podcast.
Yeah, we have like the top 0.4% of extreme nerds who watch this show. It's not, don't watch the guide channel. It's not for you guys.
Right on. So yeah, for my end, so I don't know if you had anything else there. Yeah,
nothing exciting to really talk about.
Right. So yeah, I had an interesting weekend last weekend. So as I said, I went to the beach for a weekend. Some friend of mine's rented a place and I got to hang out. And what I really came to appreciate is I drove my Tesla Model 3 down there, is the just the air conditioning from remote, you know. So I could go, because we packed out of the house and we wanted to spend more hours on the beach. So I had my guitar in my car. It was like 90 some degrees out there, and no bueno. You can't leave like instruments like that in a super hot car for like long periods of time. It's not a good idea. So I was just having the ability to have your AC on while you're hanging out on the beach and your car is like a nice 70 degrees, in the parking lot somewhere in the blazing sun, worth a lot. I just was one of those things that I just was very thankful for last weekend. That's all.
Well, welcome to 2012 Tesla ownership. You've now realized what it's like to live in the future.
That's right. So, but other vehicles do this too now, right? I mean,
yeah, pretty much every electric car you can leave climate on.
Right, right. Which is, yeah. All right. So let's talk about some news. So Tesla has finally built its first Cybertruck. It was originally unveiled on the 22nd of November, 2019. So that's now it's 2023. So that was a few years ago, almost 4 years. So Tesla shared a photo last Saturday on Twitter. First deliveries the end of the third quarter. But now the thing is ready. That's the first one. Delivery is coming up soon. There's a 1.6 million pre-orders, according to a crowdsourced reservation tracker. I don't know how accurate that is. I can't speak to the accuracy, but that's sounds like they'll probably have demand for this for quite a while. Martin, what do you think about this?
You can't see the truck very well, but I'm sure it's fine. I'm sure it's well built. They surrounded the thing. Yeah, no, it's such good news to see the workers who put these vehicles together, and it's great that they have their opportunity to get a camera on a stick or someone from a balcony and celebrate the people who make these vehicles that we love to go and drive. I love that about this photograph. Tesla is, as long-term viewers know, much to my frustration, Tesla is far too much about one person. There's an incredible team of people who work there. What was nice about the recent Tesla event a couple of months ago is Elon had, what was it, 16 or 20 people on stage. It was a bit like a giant boy band gig all on stools, but I love that. I love that because it wasn't just, Franz talking about the design or it wasn't just one other person who's very senior. So I love that side of it, and it's going to be a massive effort to get this thing scaled. And so after that, we heard some more news about the inside of the bulkhead being shown online, and it's not symmetrical. So people were from right-hand drive markets talking about, it's easy enough to stamp a different. It's just a stamp. It's just a stamp. Don't worry. They're gonna stamp a right-hand drive version. From what I understand, and it's easy to miss a bit of news, but I wanted to try and ask the viewers, many of who are very in touch with the news. Everything that I've heard from Elon Musk and everything that I've read and seen about this is for North America.
Right.
I know I got friends in the UK who got a deposit on this. And I've sent them Elon's tweet where he says, oh, this car's not coming to the UK. Right. And they're like, you're just giving them an interest-free loan. This truck is not going anywhere. It's too big for our roads. It wouldn't pass our pedestrian safety regulations in the European Union without redesigning the front end, which they won't do because it looks how they want it to look. So, out of this came a bunch of pictures of people saying, right-hand drive might be a little while to wait. I don't think that it's ever going to be right-hand drive for Australia and UK. I'd love to be wrong, so leave a comment or you know, put it in the live chat or the comments below if you're watching this after we're live. If you've got a link to something, or I can, you know, see where if they said, oh, no, we are going to do that. But I think, you know, if you're in North America and you've got a reservation in for this, I think, you know, and you love this truck, and it wouldn't be for me, then it just got a little bit closer. Everywhere else, this truck is not being exported. I saw people online this week saying, I can't wait till they start making this in Shanghai and Berlin.
Right.
I don't think it will be. We'd love to be wrong. We'd love to be wrong. Yeah, very cool to see this. And I can't think of too much else on the earnings call that they talked about with Cybertruck that was
I've got a couple of things here. But one thing, Martin, when you look at this picture, check this out. Let me share this. And so we're looking at the picture kind of closed in. Do you notice that there doesn't appear to be a driver's side door on this truck?
Driver's side is
door, like the, you know, the left hand side.
Oh yeah, you can see all the way through.
Yeah, it's like
notice that? I mean, that just could be.
At that
for any of our viewers on YouTube or Twitch, maybe maybe the truck is that way because they didn't have the door on. How many of these are even in existence? Is this number two?
This is number one.
Because just, you know, at the announcement, obviously people got to go in a vehicle. Elon Musk drove it around California a bit when he went out to dinner, so people went wild. We see it occasionally driving around. We see it. You know, they wait till the drone goes up over Texas, then someone just takes it for a little lap around Texas and, you know, goes back indoors because it's good. It gets the hype with the Tesla faithful. And I've always wondered how many, it's like the trucks. How many are there really? This could be number two. Who knows?
Right.
You know, people have seen it at the Tesla investor days and stuff when you go along to Texas. So it's cool that there's at least two in the world now, hopefully a few more release candidates than just two. But it's exciting stuff if you've got your reservation in.
Right. So one of the things we maybe learned about it, there's rumor out this week that it may only arrive with a 350-mile range. And that's
was that rumor or was that news, Dom?
That's I mean, it was tweeted out by a YouTuber that we know.
Tesla. Yeah, that was a rumor. Tweeted out
that based on confidential conversations with three people, I believe we will be seeing the 350-mile Cybertruck, which is, you know, that's definitely short of the 620 miles of range touted when the Cybertruck, you know, was debuted, and also short of, I guess, of what we expect now, a 500-mile truck, right?
Well, I guess so. That was a rumor, but it's from someone who's pretty good at these kind of things. The other bit of news that Tesla promoted this week with Cybertruck, which I thought I'd ask you if this was. It seemed a very specific. One of the interesting things about Silverado, about Ford F-150 Lightning, about the vehicle-to-grid stuff and powering your home and all of the things that I think are very exciting, Silverado looks really good. Okay, so it's got 200-plus kilowatt-hour battery, but the range looks fantastic. These trucks are giving... When the Cybertruck was first shown in 2019, of course, none of this we couldn't compare. And so the stuff that's coming on the... You know, it's on the road right now and is coming isn't vaporware. If those that are uncharitable to Tesla just calls the Cybertruck vaporware. And so it's kind of got to raise its game. And so they put out this really weird stat and they said, yes, but the Cybertruck will be the only truck under 19 feet with four doors and at least a 6-foot bed. And I thought, well, you're stacking some stuff there, but is that important to US buyers? I gather the 19-foot thing's about fitting in garages. Four doors, I guess, is important, and a 6-foot bed, I guess, is important. Also, in the pictures that we also saw, there's no what's it called pass through. That's
mid gate.
Mid gate. There's no mid gate on this, but they did talk about the rear glass maybe coming down, so you can get it at an angle or something if you've got some long goods. But I thought, oh, that's it. The reason I mentioned that is because I thought it's interesting that there wasn't a thing. Like when they launched it, they're like, oh, you could throw rocks at the damn thing and it's bulletproof. Oh no, you can't do that. But it was lacking a big thing when they started talking about it on this week's earnings. And I thought, well, if you're wheeling out that very specific stat, then you're not saying it's going to be better than the Lightning, better than Silverado, better than Hummer, which Tesla's always done. So maybe they got some competition now. And I like that.
Yeah. Someone was saying that I had the range wrong. The original range wasn't 620 miles, but if we just share this document here, see, back then, according to this article on Inside EVs, these are the ranges that we saw, and quad motor all-wheel drive, 620 miles of range. That's where I got my figures from. So I don't know if we reported that wrong, but I think that's probably right. Yeah. And what else was there? Someone mentioned Larrier. I don't know how you say your pronounce this username, but I love Tesla, but the Cybertruck is truly vaporware. I don't know if you can call it vaporware at this point, man. We see it. It's coming like really soon. Vaporware is like,
It has been 4 years.
It's been a while for sure. Yeah. It's true.
But you know, what Elon Musk said, it was coming in. It'll be, you get yours in 2021 and for the early ones, and the rest of the specs will come out in 2022. So, as Tesla fans always remind me, he's not a liar. He's just optimistic, and the world loves an optimist. So I have to love Elon Musk, they tell me. So I respectfully listen to their opinion.
Well, we did. We not to give him a pass, but we did have the global pandemic in the middle of this, which probably accounts for 6 to 8 months of solid delays on vehicles that were in production, not 2 years, but you got to cut in at least 6 to 8 months because you just couldn't get anything done. And then coming out of that, all the supply chain shortages, which are still affecting the industry. I know we don't talk about it as much, but when I get the opportunity to talk to people like Darren and other people in the industry, they still tell me that it's still very painful, the supply chain problems. I'm just curious to see how many we'll build this year. If you remember the last couple of years, I ran Twitter polls where I said I'm going to give away a charger to whoever comes closest to guessing how many they deliver to customers that year. And so I think they are going to actually, I think at least one customer is going to get one this year. So this is probably going to be the year that I actually have to send somebody out a charger. And I'm just curious to see how many that's going to be. I think it's going to be, under 50, but we'll see. Maybe I'll be surprised and they'll start building them in a couple months and deliver a few hundred of them.
So there was one other bit of Cybertruck news that I think is important. So on the Q2 earnings call that just happened a couple of days ago, Tesla's senior VP for powertrain and energy engineering, Drew Baglino, said that here in Texas, we're preparing to launch our Cybertruck cell, which has 10% higher energy density than current production. That was accomplished through process and mechanical design optimization. So the big 4680 cell that they created is already into its second iteration with a 10% improvement, which is great because I believe the cell itself was not significantly better than the 2170s it came from, except it was probably cheaper to manufacture. I think that was a big breakthrough so far with the 4680s. But an improvement in energy density would be pretty good. I don't know.
Well, range isn't hard to get. You just put a bigger battery in. They can't significantly lose out to the competition. Now that, as Tom says, with a pandemic, and yet through that, all of their competitors have got their trucks on the road. Not Silverado, but that's coming soon. And their competitors now have given them a benchmark. And so if they come in below that benchmark on range, then that looks really bad on Tesla, who have always been the winner. And I'm not advocating to be, Mr. Big Daddy Range Boy, because I'm advocating for cars that are fit for purpose. So if you need a 100 kilowatt hour battery, have it. And if you need a 20 kilowatt hour battery, have it. And if you need 300 kilowatts because you're making a refuse collection lorry, whatever, have it. It would just be a different set of messaging from Tesla, apart from, we go further, et cetera, et cetera. But they should be the most efficient because they always are. So they can do more with less. And that is probably the most important part.
Right. Greg Kramer says the cell is longer. Is that why it's 10% more power? I don't believe the cell is longer. It's still 4680. 80 is 80 millimeters high. So I think it's the same specifications. I think it's just, better. Just a better, chemical slurry on the anode or cathode, or who knows what exactly they made the improvement. But yeah, So also they announced, I think this past week, that the 4680 team in Austin have passed the 10 million production cells made in Texas. So that's, you know, it sounds like a big number, but actually there's 828 batteries about in the Tesla Model Y. So that would be enough for about 12,077 Model Ys, probably fewer Cybertrucks, but at least we know that the Austin battery plant is cranking them out, and it's not all just coming from that pilot factory they have there in Fremont. All right, so other Tesla news real quick I want to hit on, because this is kind of a big deal, I think. So on the earnings call too, they mentioned that Tesla is in early discussions with a major OEM to license FSD, Elon Musk said. So full self-driving, the autonomy suite, we might see that in another automaker's vehicles, which is kind of like mind blown in a way, because everyone seems to be really, you know, keen on developing their own, you know, software stack, their own intellectual property around autonomous driving. So I don't know if y'all want to take any guesses. You know, off the top of my head, I'm like Ford is the one that comes to my mind, just because, you know, I think Jim Farley can see eye to eye with Elon Musk on a lot more, you know, areas than other manufacturers. And also, like, companies like Mercedes, they have their own autonomous, you know, software suite right now. So I don't think they'd shop around for a new one. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I'm not so sure he's really in deep discussion with any, you know, serious big automaker on this, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Yeah. Right. Maki Evlog says define major and define early discussions.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, right. You know, he had dinner with Henrik Fisker 2 months ago and,
right.
And he said, oh yeah, that might sound like a good idea.
I don't think I get to feel like there's more to it than that, you know?
I don't know. Elon floats a lot. He's very smart with his positioning. Sure. And you know, there's no floating something like that, there's almost no downside to it, you know, because he hasn't named anybody. He could be talking to someone, and maybe that's his way of seeing if other automakers will say, oh wow, he's really talking to somebody, maybe we should talk to him, you know. So you know, I don't know, I need some more smoke to say there's fire here.
Sure. And Nebula 1701, who's, you know, keeps their finger on the pulse of the EV industry, like few of our followers. This guy knows what's going on. He suggests maybe it's Toyota. Like, watch it be Toyota, which that would be a surprise to me as well. But all right,
just think how much he sells it to his own customers as an option. Just, you know, there's no way the other car companies would pay anything like that to a competitor per vehicle. There's no way, you know. So anyway,
right. Okay, let's move along then, because so Ford has significantly cut the price of the F-150 Lightning up to almost $10,000 for some trims. They announced it on Monday. So they say they're taking advantage of increased plant capacity. Higher production scale allows for reducing cost per unit, combined with improving battery raw material costs, which is a good point. Raw material costs for batteries is gone down recently, to the surprise of many in the industry, like lithium and cobalt even has gone down. I'm not sure what nickel's doing off the top of my head, but yeah, so this is kind of a big deal, I think, because they had cranked, they brought the truck out and they had a set of prices, and they've just cranked them up over the last, you know, over the pandemic and the situation going on. I don't know, almost like $20,000 over some of the original prices, right? But this brings it back down to earth. I'm not sure. So, Tom, you're really keen on the pricing for a Lightning F-150. You own one. So what do you think of these cuts?
So going back to where you said, much to the surprise of people in the industry, I don't think it was a surprise that the raw material costs have dropped recently. I think most industry people were expecting that to happen because they had increased so dramatically after COVID. And that's the reason why Ford had to raise their prices to begin with. was because their raw material cost had gone up so dramatically, they were going to just get killed on every vehicle they sold. So that's why you notice they from what, and this is how it was conveyed to me at Ford, but they did the initial price increase thinking that the prices were going to lower on their raw materials just within months, and then it didn't happen. So they had to do another price increase, and then it still didn't happen. But now that they're seeing some relief on that, and also that their capacity is to build the vehicles has increased dramatically, both Lightning and Mustang Mach-E. Now they're saying, okay, we can start pulling back on the pricing, and the prices are still more than what they were when the vehicle launched a year ago. Right. So it's, you know, I think a lot of the news articles, the way they're seem is like they're slashed because they can't get rid of them, and their dramatic price increase decreases, which they are, but the vehicles still cost more than what Ford promised us they would cost back when they launched the vehicle a year ago. So mine is pretty close. My extended range Lariat, I think, is the closest price to what it was when it initially launched. I think it's only like $20 more now than it was when the original pricing, but some of the other ones like the Pro is still, you know, much more than what it was, $10,000 more than what it was. The XLTs are more, I think Platinum slightly more, but you know, it's still not, it's not like they had to cut these below their original pricing. They still cost more than what they did a year ago.
Hey, right. Tom, if I could jump in here, I just wanted to kind of pick your brain a little bit about what's the current state of play, supply demand for the F-150s. Here's my concern. Mm-hmm. If there really are cars sitting on the lot, then it makes sense to me that the manufacturers, you know, lowering the price. I mean, perhaps driven by some of the price cuts that Tesla is doing. I don't know. But if in fact these things are still in short supply, I'm concerned the dealers are just going to continue to do markups on these things, if not 10, 20 grand. And is that something that the Ford dealerships are still doing, or has, you know, has Farley kind of clamped down on that? But just, I'm just curious, because I know you're in tight with this whole, the pulse of the F-150 distribution.
As far as the clamping down, there's very little clamping down that automakers can do. They'll be sued by the dealership networks if they try to interfere with pricing. But what Ford did with this new Model E sort of franchise, that starts January 1st, 2024, Dave. So at this moment right now, they cannot interfere with markups. No manufacturer can. And if they attempt to, they'll be sued strongly by not just the dealership, by the whole NADA and the dealership, you know, lobby. So as of now, it's the Wild West. You can charge whatever you want. But what's happening is we are seeing inventory increase now, and I think for two reasons. Number one, the Ford's making a lot more Lightning and Mach-Es over the last month or two than they ever were able to do before. So the whereas before there were none on lots, you had to order them and wait. So now they're actually getting to a point where they're starting to accumulate inventory. I haven't analyzed if that inventory is more than, say, you know, like I saw in some of the articles on hand throughout the country. Now there's 500 Lightning on dealer lots or something, or produced. I don't know what how do you relate that to, say, another Ford vehicle? Does the average Ford vehicle have 2,000 vehicles sitting on lots? Then it doesn't seem bad. But if the average Ford is 300 and there's 600 Lightnings, okay, now they're starting to pile up. They're not selling them. So I don't have that figured out whether or not there's more. But for the first time, we are starting to see Mach-E and Lightnings accumulate in inventory. That right. was never the case before because they couldn't build them fast enough. They were always on order.
And Tom, you know, there's a couple of demand levers that manufacturers have to incentivize consumers to purchase their products. One of them is price, right? Which, generally speaking, you don't see the big manufacturers other than Tesla lowering prices. That's kind of a weird thing. But you do see, you know, rebates, money on the hood, and also, you know, subsidized interest rates, money. And what I didn't see in conjunction with this Ford F-150 Lightning, you know, price reduction was any kind of like 0.9% over 60 months. Because listen, let's face it, rates are super high right now. If you want to go out and buy one of these trucks, it's going to cost you a lot of money. So, you know, it's just interesting they did a price reduction. That seems like the most radical change to increase demand to me.
Right. But I think that that was more of getting it in line with what they wanted to sell it all along. And those price increases were temporary increases to offset the increase in manufacturing that they weren't planning on. You know, Ford's an established company. They're not, you know, they're not like Rivian, where, you know, when Rivian launched, they raised their prices immediately. I didn't expect to see that from Ford, because they for a couple of years they were planning on what the pricing was going to be to this vehicle. Then as soon as it launches, they had to have three price increases in 8 months. And that's because we're in extraordinary times. So I take this, and I could be wrong, as not as much of a reaction to low interest, but I'm sure that's part of it. They want to have more demand, but I think it's more of them saying, look, We had to do those price increases. We had a 20% more than what the vehicle launched at. But now that our costs have come down, we're going to bring the prices back in line with what we expected to sell this truck in at all along. That's how I'm interpreting it. And that's not just a complete guess. I have had some talks with Ford reps, and that's how it's being painted to me. Now we'll see long term. Do the vehicles continue to accumulate? Is there excess inventory on the lots? Now you got to understand the Silverado EV is on the horizon, so there might be people that reserve the Lightning and are saying, maybe I'll go get that vehicle. I'm really not going to count the Cybertruck, because nobody knows when they're going to produce them, how many they're going to produce them, when you're going to be able to take possession. And unless you're one of those first reservation holders, you're not getting a Cybertruck for a very long time. But the Silverado is right around the corner. That's number one. And number two, even to a certain degree, Ford might have cut their own throat with talking about how that next generation truck is only a year and a half away, and it's going to have a NACS connector, and it's going to have next generation software. And, you know, I mean, Jim Farley was, you know, grinning ear to ear every opportunity he could to talk about how great that next truck is going to be. So maybe people are saying, you know what, this first, I could keep my F-150 now, and maybe I'll skip over the Lightning and go right to Ford's next gen. So I think all that's conspiring at this moment to maybe put some downward pressure on sales.
And I think there was a bit of a softening of demand for EVs generally, just with all the talk of charging infrastructure over the first part of the year. And I'm not sure some of that hasn't affected, you know, sales of like non-Tesla electric vehicles somewhat. But now with everyone adopting, you know, the Tesla charging standard, I expect that to kind of reverse. But that sharing of the Tesla network doesn't really start happening until early next year, I believe. So it would be interesting to see what happens from between now and like the first of next year with that friction point out of the way. But speaking of adopting the Tesla charger, we had another bit of news this week. I don't know if there anything else, anybody want to say anything else about the F-150 Lightning price? No. Okay. So yeah, Nissan has announced that it is adopting the Tesla North American charging standard. So it's the first Japanese automaker, I believe, to do so. It's the same kind of a plan and time frame as the other. So it'll adopt. It'll be able to use the Tesla charging network early 2024 with an adapter, and 2025 the cars will come from the factory with native, we call it NACS, North American Charging Standard from Tesla, installed in the car. So Nissan will have, you know, cars that charge on just about every charging standard. That's the great thing about standards, right? What do you think, Martin?
Trying to work out how many Arias have been sold in the USA so far. And whether the CCS plug on the Aria had the world's shortest lifespan of anything, because obviously Chatham on the Leaf, and then Aria came and that was CCS, and now that's gone, and now it's going to be NACS. Of course, right thing to do. I would have been surprised if it hadn't if it had been like a Toyota. I think they're not ready to go yet with the announcement, but we know everyone's going to make announcements. It's when you choose to do it. And it was great to see the first Japanese one finally fall. All the dominoes are going to fall. It's just when they choose to do it and when they choose to do an announcement. So,
right on. Kyle, Dave, any thoughts about Nissan moving to NACS?
Yeah, it's the one company to offer it all. CHAdeMO, CCS, and now the Tesla connector. And yeah, pretty hilarious. About time. You know, it's all going to happen. None of these are surprises anymore. Everyone's going to switch. And, you know, those who don't won't buy them. So, you know, good luck. So everyone's going to switch. Nissan, of course, the first Japanese automaker to make the move. And yeah, it's all exciting. It's good news. I think we need to see Tesla start to share a little bit more communication, or at least internally. Hopefully they're working on this, supporting 1,000-volt architecture for version 3 superchargers, because that's holding up a lot of the big high voltage cars, Hyundai, Kia, Lucid, et cetera. It's something we've been talking about since the beginning, but they still haven't said how they're going to support 1,000-volt on V3, which, as far as my understanding goes, should be just a slight reconfiguration change of the rectifiers inside the actual charging unit. You know, maybe something a tech can go out and do in a day or less. So that's going to be needed. And yeah, I mean, ultimately, it's all good news from our side.
Yeah, I just want to add a little bit of a dose. I mean, I know nerd level 9000 on this podcast, because you got a lot of smart guys. But, you know, I talk to people every day and they're like, hey, did you see that, you know, Nissan just announced NACS, right? And they go, that means Tesla, right, Dave? And I go, yeah. He goes, oh, so if I buy a Nissan Ariya now, I can actually go to a supercharger now? And I'm like, you know, what's interesting is you have sort of the everyday man, their interpretation of these things on CNBC or news or Wall Street Journal, that these manufacturers are moving this way. And the earliest that anybody's going to be able to see anything with these adapters is what? The spring of 2024.
Yeah, next year. So
this forward selling from a strategic standpoint, it's all well and good. And all of that, but you know, it, and I know it's not anything new to anybody, but just the, you know, heard on the street, just from my lens, there's a lot of like confusion out there. If I buy this, then I can go to supercharger. And then some people say, well, Dave, I thought I saw you charge it a Tesla supercharger in a CCS car. Well, that was only on one of what, 12, you know, magic docks. Like, what the heck is a magic dock? And right. Why are there more of those? You know, so it's just, it gets a little bit interesting out there, but it is good news. I'm happy to see Nissan going in. I'd like to see Lucid. I hope you don't get mad at me saying that, but where's Lucid on this whole thing with NACS? It's crazy.
Waiting on 1,000-volt support.
I know, but come on, yeah. You know, they're so smart. Bring out an adapter that somehow figures it out.
That's,
you know,
not really.
I know.
You
I
need
did.
A big onboard booster.
I know.
I'm also trying to envision in my mind, like, the conversation between like people at Tesla and people at Lucid is like some bad blood between. Nope. I think those. No.
Nope.
No.
That's just that maybe at the top level.
At the top level, yeah. Right? At the top level, you know, that
doesn't. But like charging people.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Know the Tesla people, because Tom and I, they were all hanging out together at Charon. Like, there's no bad blood there.
Yeah.
Right. At the engineer level, sure. Everyone's cool.
But even like project manager, like, yeah, there's that. That's not going to hold up. That okay. It really is just the fact that if Lucid were to go to Tesla to support NACS right now, unless they come up with some deal to make version 3000 volt capable, there's not a single version 4 out there yet in the US. And in Europe, the version 4s are just version 3 cabinets. You're basically saying, hey, buy our car, it only charges at 44 kilowatts.
You know what? I'll take that.
It's better than some.
I mean, seriously, give me that right now. I'm about to drive my Lucid back home starting tomorrow morning.
Okay.
1800 miles. You know what? If I knew I had that, I'd be happy.
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't want to sit 3 hours to charge your car. That's just not cool.
All right.
But I think Lucid should do it. I agree with Dave, because I think they need just stuff to say. The biggest frustration with Lucid is they've got really smart people making really good products. And I know it's not finished. I know they're still working on software. They're still getting better. It's their first product. But in the grand scheme, they've come from nowhere. And yeah, they've got lots of money. I know how they're funded. But still, it's a great product for their first one. And there's just, you know, it's just saying stuff like this, getting the announcement out there. Hey, you know, 2024, we'll put the next connector, you know, or we'll ship with an adapter 25. We'll put it on natively, like everyone's saying, 24 for the adapter, 25 natively. That would just give just another reason to talk about Lucid. It just puts wind in their sails. Biggest problem with Lucid, just no one's talking about them. Like, there are car journos that get given the cars and they review them and the reviews are amazing. And we, you know, we're going to see Kyle's race to Vegas and the cars are fantastic and they're great. But otherwise, they're not giving people a reason to talk about them. I'm not, you know, I know I've, you know, often given Elon a hard time for too much hot air, but surely there's got to be a middle ground somewhere where, you know, Peter Rawlinson or somebody at the company can just do a little bit more about lighting that fire, lighting the excitement around Lucid. I know that's not his, like his style, I know, is with a workbench and some motor windings and being, look at this, and some, you know, softly spoken. And like, maybe it's somebody else at Lucid that needs to do that. But these kind of announcements would just give a little bit of something to Lucid at the minute that would make people pay attention because the cars and tech are really good.
Right, I can't see any downside to announcing. I mean, if they had make the deal, you got to make the deal first. But
there would be, because as far as I understand it, the contracts, the way that they announce it, you're sort of locked into that. So Tesla would need to say, by the time you start putting NACS ports on your cars, we will support high speed charging for your vehicles. You know, at many locations, not just however many version fours they put in. There's so many version threes; those have to support 1,000 volt, in my opinion. And that's my impression. I don't see many Lucid owners going to sit at 44 kilowatts and be happy with it.
No, they won't, and they won't understand why it's charging so slowly. You know, like Dave talked about how the average man on the street doesn't, you know, there's not nerd level 9,000 like we are, that they're going to expect when they go into Tesla superchargers to be able to rock it, you know, and it just won't happen. And they'll be wondering why they walked inside, got a cup of coffee, came out, and they only added 8% state of charge instead of the, you know, 40 that they're used to in 20 minutes. So I think they have to sort this out. I think the Tesla has to sort out the 1,000-volt architecture before the companies like Lucid and Hyundai and Kia and even Stellantis, because that's the Ram Rev is going to have an 800-volt system. I think that's why we haven't seen any of those companies jump in yet, because it's a bad customer experience. They're looking at, you know, everybody talks about how great Tesla charges the systems. This is fantastic. Now my car can charge it. And then they plug in, they're like, womp, womp, womp. You know, like they want to eliminate. They want to be sure that that's not going to be the case. That's right. What I think.
Yeah. Once the first automaker, a high voltage automaker, makes the switch, then we'll have more clarity as to how this is all going to work out.
Right. And we're only going to see more 800 volt systems as you know, time goes on. So it's got to happen, right?
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, right. All right. Let's move on a little bit to something else. So this is kind of a big deal, actually. I thought I should have moved it higher up and maybe in the story order, but so Rivian was supposed to build this new factory where it's going to be producing the R2 vehicles. R2S would be, I guess, what they're going to call the next SUV, a little smaller, more affordable SUV. They announced a plant in Georgia. They were supposed to, get construction underway last summer, and they're investing like $5 billion. The state of Georgia, I believe, was going to give them like seven, or maybe it was county, I'm not exactly sure, but there was like $700 million in property tax breaks, and that just got them a lawsuit, basically. People not happy with whatever, wherever that money's coming from, I guess taxpayers at some point. So it's been in front of the courts for a long time. But just this week, the Georgia Supreme Court will let stand an appellate court's ruling that primarily sided with the state and the local development authority and paved the way for the bulk of those property tax breaks to be reinstated for Rivian. And so now construction is officially back underway again. I believe there's some land clearing already, but you know, things are pretty much sitting still for a while. So this is like really great news. Rivian's really needs to get this plant up and running and get that more affordable product out there. This plant should do 400,000 vehicles a year, they say. And that new vehicle is like, yeah, the R2. I'm not sure if they're going to make a pickup truck, but they're making an SUV for sure. And it's going to start around $40,000, which is really, really good. And maybe max out around 60. So that's a sweet spot for electric SUVs, I believe. Good news, right, Tom?
Yeah, you know, well, I suppose it's good news. It's unfortunate that I don't like the fact that these companies get these enormous billion-dollar tax breaks. It really burns me even more when, like, sports teams to build these giant stadiums for, you know, the playgrounds for these billionaire owners. But I understand it a little bit more with regards to this type of a tax credit, because they are going to provide, I think, 7,500 quality jobs, you know, working auto factories. That's a quality job. It's not, mm-hmm. you know, selling a beer at a stadium, which is, you know, most of those, the jobs at the stadiums are not really good, high quality, high paying jobs. But you get that with the auto manufacturing. And then I think the way Rivian figured it, there's another like 8,000 jobs that aren't directly at the factory. You know, the whole area is going to get built up. People are going to open up businesses, coffee shops, hotels, all that stuff. So it's going to add even more jobs. So there might be a net positive, but it still burns me that they get these billion-dollar tax incentives when they really don't need them. But the problem is, at this point, unless there was some kind of a federal law that disallowed it in all the states, you can't stop it, because the states are always going to compete against each other to try to get the companies to bring their jobs there. And that's what they did here. And, you know, hopefully it's a net positive. We see this all the time. Everywhere a new factory is built, there's massive tax breaks. Mm-hmm. And it's meant to, everybody tries to sweeten the pot even more. You remember when Tesla was, you know, Elon was shopping the Gigafactory in Austin, you know, there were states playing against each other and everyone was trying to one up each other to get the company to come in there and create a lot of jobs. So, but I tend to think it's a good thing for the area. You know, I think this is going to be good for Georgia. It seems like, this is going to be a big factory. I think Rivian's here to stay. I know some people are saying they're in trouble. They may not survive, but I think Rivian's going to make it, and this will be good, a net positive for the area.
Well, there's stocks out of the basement. That's one positive for them for sure. At least the investment community is kind of getting back on board with them. They were down to like, right? I think they went as low as like $11 or $12. Maybe Dave, you know what their numbers were on that. More okay, but they're up. They're up, I think, $26 yesterday. So that's a huge, that's, I mean, if you invested at the bottom of that, you're doing pretty good, my friend. right. But yeah, great news for Rivian. And I think it's, should be, so someone mentioned this as well, cause Rivian put out a little video of people trying out their dual motor situation. Oh, that's a, okay. That's going to be a, so I'm confusing the R1s and the R2s together. For a second, I was thinking, well, maybe since it's been delayed so long, they're going to make some R2s at the normal Illinois factory. But no, it's just a dual motor version rather than the four motor. Right. Okay. So I guess move along. We have a bunch of little stories. This is actually kind of interesting. The Cadillac Optiq has leaked, and it looks like a mini Lyriq. I don't know if you guys saw this. I missed this somehow this week, but I don't know if we can pull it up on the screen, Martin. But so in China, when you bring a new vehicle to market, the Industry and Information Technology, you know, puts it up on their website so people can kind of see what it looks like ahead of time. I'm not sure exactly why it gets thrown up in the public website, but it helps us when we see a product like this, you know. Because we haven't heard anything about this. I don't think we even heard the name, really. Optiq.
Yeah. Lyriq Celestiq Optiq. I keep doing that myself.
right.
How
right.
do I say this? It's Optiq, yeah.
I am saying that wrong. Right, Optiq. That makes total sense. So is it a looker, speaking of optics?
No.
It's not the best at the front end, yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually one of the worst at the front end.
Okay, Dave, you're laughing. What are you gonna say?
I just love how my man is never shy to state his opinion on aesthetics, but then claims he doesn't really care about aesthetics. You know,
I don't. It wouldn't stop me from buying it. If it had 3,000 horsepower in drift mode, I'd be into it. But it's ugly.
I don't really dislike it. I mean, just to throw my counterpoint, I'd have to see it in person. I saw a Lyriq actually for the first time about a month ago. I don't know why it took me so long. And I thought it was nice looking. It just doesn't.
Wait, it took you so long to see a Lyric because they've built four of them.
Right. Is that one?
Yeah, pretty yes. much.
Yeah.
Well, not four, but 1600, I think.
Yeah, some very low number.
But anyway, it looked okay to me, but I doesn't do anything for me. I don't know. It's okay.
Yeah, I actually really like the Lyric the way it looks. I'm going to be testing one soon now. Can't wait. And Nebula, yeah. who is in the comments here, who's like a GM expert, I would say, says that this is the Equinox EV with a Cadillac badge.
Okay. Mm. Right. Is it?
That yeah. makes sense. They usually make that. You know, there's usually that smaller version SUV that's based on the Equinox that Cadillac makes.
And we all know Tom's the biggest Chevy Equinox fan on the planet. I'm not even joking. He genuinely is.
He is. At least on the podcast, he is. He's the biggest Equinox fan on the podcast.
You start bringing up the Chevy Equinox and Tom lights up. He loves
it. He likes it.
Well, we had one and we loved it. We thought it was a great, like, compact crossover. It did everything we wanted it to do. Never had a problem with it. 8 years, just put gas and tires in the damn thing and change the oil. So I'm looking forward to the Equinox EV. Maybe we'll pick one up.
Tom, we should go. You know, we should go see the Barbie movie together, you and I.
It's funny. My wife really wants to see that. And yesterday it was like we had dinner, and she's like, "I know this is crazy, but do you want to go see the Barbie movie?" I just put my head down. I'm like, "If you really want to go, I'll go and sit there." You know what I mean? And she's like, "You're no, I man. Can tell you don't want to go, but I really don't want to see that. Like, but if you want me to, I'll sit next to you." She's like, "No.
Rob, you need to. It's more research. They're like correlating the movie to this new EV. I mean, you got to do it. It's you owe it to society.
What car is included?
No, this whole Equinox EV. All the
I didn't even know that.
Oh yeah, no,
the Barbie movie is all about the Equinox EV.
Oh really?
Was it all about the Equinox?
I didn't see that.
Well, you have to see. We have to.
I don't know.
All right, look that up. Maybe I am wrong, but
that's why I had no idea. No, why you were
GM's commercials for the new eco. Maybe right. I'm pretty sure they're showing Barbie.
Well, that's because you still have cable TV at home.
I don't. I got YouTube TV now.
Wow.
It looks like there is some sort of
there's a correlation. Partners. I'm telling you, Tom, we gotta go do market research.
Nebula, our GM resident yes. expert, who really should be a presenter on this podcast instead of us, he says the Blazer EV.
Oh, the Blazer EV. Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah,
way cooler.
Oh,
than
okay.
Right. The Blazer EV. Sorry.
Right, let me find that. Yeah, because they've given Ken a Hummer EV, so that makes sense.
That's a very Ken car.
Oh yeah.
So that makes sense that's now. Perfect, let me see if I can find something while you're talking.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So I guess I need to see the Barbie movie this weekend myself. Oh my god. I do like pink.
Okay. Yeah, there's a whole commercial on. It's not. I'm not sharing the right screen. You wouldn't think I've not done this before. There you go. It's on YouTube, so maybe we're going to get dinged for this, but who cares?
Right.
It's fine.
Nosedive under braking.
and Barbie dives in the Blazer, yeah. and look.
That looks like a commercial.
That's hilarious. Oh, my goodness.
Wow. If that's actually Blazer EV suspension tuning, this may not be that great of a car.
Slammed on the brakes.
Watch that beginning bit where they hit the brakes and they literally hit.
There it is.
Oh, yeah. No, that's done for TV. Surely that's done for TV. Whoa,
these guys on the motorcycles that pull.
Back to the drawing board on suspension dynamics.
You see why you guys need me here? I bring this up Barbie. Why. You know what I mean? Like
this
know.
Is why. This yeah, is why.
You should buy more often, Dave.
Yeah, well, whatever.
Okay. I guess we should officially invite you next time.
That's
you're just kind of gate crashing this time, but
we should do an out of spec reacts to the Barbie movie and just analyze the Blazer EV movements.
Yes. Yeah, if we did a watch along party on Twitch, I'd be up for that. Let's do a watch along party and we get some beers in and we'll all watch it together.
Mystery Science 3000 for Barbie,
That sounds like a fun idea. All right. So speaking of Lyric and only building like 1600 of them or whatever, GM has shut down its Cami EV plant amid Ultium battery shortage. So that's the plant in Canada that makes the delivery vans. The name slipping my mind.
BrightDrop.
Right. So yeah. So they'd already slowed the production down. They were doing like 2 weeks on, 4 weeks off shifts for workers, you know, trying to keep everyone employed because the production is like slower than they wanted. And this seems to be the problem plaguing Hummer, Cadillac, and now BrightDrop. There's some key part in the modules that they can't get enough of. I don't know if it's like we're talking minerals or it's like some esoteric capacitor resistor. I have no idea what they're missing, but there's some sort of shortage. It's just really messing up their whole plan, their whole EV rollout, which they really need to get under control because they got the Equinox coming and the Blazer coming out later this year, and those are high volume, you know, vehicles. It's, but we need, you know, we need batteries. This is, I don't know, this is a big deal. What do they need to do, Martin?
They need to get their three factories up and running as quick as possible. The president of North America, that would be GM of North America, I think, this week, rather than one of the brands. This week, I think he said, H2, the second half of the year, is going to be entirely different for us, and we're going to have supply of Ultium technology, and we'll get these vehicles to scale, which they need to, because I think we worked out on last week's show, if you strip out Bolt and Bolt EUV sales from all of their figures, Hummer had, yeah, like five, and then a few Lyrics and stuff, and then all of a sudden they're a niche EV maker, you know, making fewer than just about everybody else in the market. So yeah, they need to have not only a good second half of the year, but a stellar half of the year. They've got it all. This is the difficult thing, isn't it? Because I think they're doing all the right things and investing all the right money, and these are such long-term plays that all of this will pay off in the future. So the first factory, which was this year, next one 2024, next one 25 or 6, but you know, their big Ultium investments will ultimately all pay off and they'll get that scale. But there's a lot of jam tomorrow, and I'm trying not to be too harsh on them today because we know it's coming down the pipeline. But yeah, it's a month off in total. Is it July 31st? Those workers go back in Canada to start making those vans. So that is a bit of a disaster.
Yeah, workers are slated to return July 31st. Yeah, I've seen that now.
Which is great. I mean, wouldn't we all love July off work? I don't know if they're getting paid for it or not.
Right. I mean, you get unemployment insurance to kind of help you, you know, with that. You know, the government will kick in some money, I guess, to help you out. But I grew up in Canada and worked and lived in Canada for a while. And getting by on unemployment insurance is no fun. It's not enough.
Would they not be staff employees? So if they could turn up and say, well, I'm here to do a day's work, and I know you know laws are different to over here, but you certainly couldn't do that over here. Like, we're not quite in France, but even then, employment law. So I would hope that they're all being paid very well to have July off. If they're not, that's terrible. It's like not their fault that GM couldn't get the batteries.
Right? No, you're going to get a side gig or something. I don't know.
Oh, man. So anyway, a month off and those BrightDrop vans, which they were doing. I didn't look at the numbers in the article. They were doing okay. It was in the thousands. I think the demand for those BrightDrop vans is really high.
Right. Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. And Kyle, you've driven them. They're pretty awesome, right?
That's correct. They are.
Yeah, right. So we had another article out this week on the 19th, GM, which 2 days ago. GM promises to speed up EV production after slow rollout in first half.
That was the one I was referring to. Sorry, yeah, I've gone too early on that.
No, it's okay. So at least, you know, they're telling us they're going to improve and increase, you know, get things up. But man, it's just kind of a terrible look, you know, when you see a huge company, like one of the biggest automakers historically, just struggling, you know, on supply chain. I don't know. It's just not a good look. I don't know what else you can really say about it, but you know, I don't know. Personally, I'm really bullish on GM's plans or their whole EV strategy. This is a little disappointing, but yeah, hopefully it'll be all straightened out. All right. So let's move along. We don't have to spend too long today. We're getting close to our regular time. I think last week we went way over, so we don't need to do that this week.
Can we make sure we do hit the next one, the Chinese car?
Yep. Oh, is it the Hi-Fi Y?
I'm excited about this.
Yeah,
because the Hi-Fi, the X is crazy.
Right.
And the Y looks like the Hi-Fi X.
Oh, Hi-Fi X. Okay.
The Hi-Fi X. It's got the gullwing doors and it's stupidly big. It's like 5.5 meters long and it's bonkers and brilliant. And the Hi-Fi Y, which is a Model Y, but they can't call it Model Y. They call it Hi-Fi Y. I'll let you do your intro. This is cool. They should sell this everywhere.
Well, I don't really have an intro. Let's just throw this thing up on the screen, and
there you go.
I've got it right here, actually. If you don't, you have it actually, or one of us has it. Yeah. But look at this thing. It's kind of like the Model X, if Tesla Model X in a way. It's got but it's like two doors in the per. Like your roof comes up, and you open up like a regular door.
Yeah. And the door's got sensors, so it won't open up if you're standing there. But yeah, it all opens up in various sections. So it's so cool.
It's cool, but kind of bizarre. I don't know. Kyle, what do you think about this? Or Dave, actually. I want to hear what Dave has to think about this.
Oh, yeah. Dad, share your thoughts.
I'm a little confused.
Right?
So I see an EV6 in the back. I don't know why.
Okay.
And then the door looks like a guillotine to me. I don't how do you get in if you open up the door but the top part's not open? What are you going to do?
You just tuck your head as normal?
I don't know.
Yeah, because look, the window's going to come up. I think it's just the roof panel. I think this is the coolest thing ever.
Okay. I need to see a video. Like, I need to see it in operation, how it all kind of works, you know? Cause maybe it is. I don't know.
Can we just stop the trend of putting these stupid LiDAR units on the roof?
Oh my God! Yeah, I'm seeing all the new cars from China seem to have that.
Yeah, just like figure out a way to integrate it nicer.
Right. Yeah, it kind of looks like the old style taxi sign or something.
Any specs on this thing, Dominic?
503 miles of range is all I have.
But is that NEDC range?
CLTC, so 347, I think.
Two pack sizes, so small and large, 76, 115. Yeah. You can get either rear wheel drive or all wheel drive in both of those. The article says that. There you go. And what else do we know about it? Big screens, big passenger screen that's got the funky kind of, privacy thing so that the driver can't actually see what's on the screen for safety, but the passenger's got a perfect view. It's just full of technology and really, it's cheaper than a Model Y in China. These cars are crazy good.
So have you driven one yet, Martin?
No, I'd love to drive. There's the Hi-Fi X and the Hi-Fi Z, and they're both $100,000 equivalent plus cars only in China. We've all got to go to China and do this podcast in China one time and just have all of these cars on display because... Yeah. I'll see if I can find that because that's the X is properly bonkers.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Show us the X. Yeah. The Hi-Fi is kind of a weird company. Just kind of popped up on our radar not that long ago. It seems like, you know, there's like a million EV brands in China. It's like,
that's because it's like, only about 2 years old. That's why, because it is a new brand. So,
right. But there's like a million new brands like that. They just pop up like Geely has, I don't know how many brands. It just like invents one every month or so. It seems like. You know, yeah, but Hi-Fi Y. I like the way it rolls off the tongue. They have the X, Y, and Z. If you're in the UK, you pronounce it like
absolutely.
That.
There we go. Look, there's the X.
Okay.
Hey, Tom. I'm just curious. Tom, when you were in China the last time, did this company even did you even visit them or see any of their products, or is this like brand? Why am I not knowing anything about
there's
this?
Probably 1,000 Chinese automakers.
Oh, yeah, that's why.
Yeah. So I wasn't even aware of this company. You know, I went to a few of the Chinese auto shows, and it's overwhelming because there's hundreds of manufacturers, mm-hmm. and they all have little areas. It's not like the auto shows here in the US where, you know, the companies have these big areas with multiple cars. You walk around and there's just hundreds of different manufacturers with like one-off cars that some of them you don't know if it's like just, you know, some billionaire rich guy wanted to make a car and put it on display, or if this is a real company that's going to try to sell more cars. And I might have even walked by something like this and not even realized it at the time that they were going to put it into production, because it's just so overwhelming. Like the Shanghai Auto Show, I went to the Guangzhou Motor Show, And I stuck with, I had a list of vehicles that I wanted to see, the Xpengs, the Neos, the Li Motors, the BYDs, and all the other stuff was just like cool things to check out. But I couldn't spend a lot of time on it because most of them are never going to make it to production. And, you know, they're just trying to put a vehicle on display to get funding or to, you know, get a partner to come. But I don't think the last time I was in China was before COVID. So I don't think this company was even on the drawing board at that point.
I think no. I think it's 2 years. I think they're 2 years old.
Yeah.
Someone can correct me. I'll do a Wikipedia, but I think they're a couple of years old.
It's crazy at the speed at which Chinese companies can do this, though. How they can, you know, form a company and then have a vehicle on the road, like Xpeng, for instance. It's crazy. Like in less than 3 years, they were selling their first car, and then they had their second car on the road 6 months later. They had their third car on the road a year and a half after starting. They had like four vehicles that they were selling in like the first 2.5 years of making a company. That's, you know, just it's bonkers how they do that.
They're 4 years old. So in the time it's taken to get the announcement of the Cybertruck to today, this company have launched, employed everyone, and launched three cars, which are also really good cars. Yeah. They're not just like some terrible thing. Yeah. The Chinese speed's amazing.
Right. And they have those cool, innovative doors in the back there. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know, they look cool, but I'm not sold. I want to play with them around and everything. Like sometimes, you know, it could have just overcomplicated this and that they could be falling apart in a year and a half. You know, look at Tesla, still can't build Falcon wing doors without glass breaking and everything. And then you're going to trust these guys with something that complicated. It looks cool, but I don't know if I'd want to own it.
So real quick, before we get out of here, there was other Chinese automaker had their EV leaked. And like to show that. So this is a huge company, but this is their first EV. They make tons of like scooters, telephones, laptops, whatever. This will be their most expensive product. Xiaomi have an EV. Mm-hmm. It's going to have like 101 kilowatt hour battery. So I don't know if people are familiar with the Xiaomi phones that they were sold for a while. They're not allowed to sell them here in the States right now, I believe. But they have a car coming, and I imagine it will be in Europe. I'm not sure how it makes itself its way to here, but that's, you know, possibility, I guess. I don't know if you have.
Well, they can't sell their phone here. Do you think they're going to be able to sell their car here?
Well, it depends. I mean, they can't sell the phone because they're worried about the government's worried about them sending or sharing information about users with, you know, the government back in China. I'm not sure if they can do the same thing with cars,
which is exactly where it's going to be parked at your house, at your office, where you're going to be sitting and talking all day.
See, let me pull up this car. That's kind of what it looks like. I'm not really sold on the look. It's got that little LiDAR thing on the top front, like you were mentioning earlier, Kyle.
Oh, it looks like an AI-designed car.
It could be.
ChatGPT?
Yeah, it's like ChatGPT produced a car.
Yeah, I don't know what to think about this car, actually. I need to see
it. The headlights part of like the front.
It's got structure. GV. It's got like Genesis GV something XYZ look to it, to me.
Right? Yeah. Anyway, I just thought I'd bring that up real quick because it's a huge company, and I believe it's like next year that it's coming out. 800 volt system, 101 kilowatt hours. That's at 726.7 volts, 139 amp hours. This weight doesn't sound. Oh, that must be the battery itself. Is 1400 pounds. Range is unknown. 43,000 dollars.
Whoa, really?
In China, that's a Chinese price. 300,000 RMB, which sounds a little steep.
Reasonable. How $43,000 is expensive?
I mean, in China, it might be.
For a 100 kilowatt hour battery pack.
That's about right.
Right.
Okay. Really? That seems super cheap to me.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we'll have to see.
Model 3 has a 60 kilowatt hour battery pack for roughly a little bit less than that here.
Good point. Hey, someone was asking earlier if you are going to China anytime soon, Kyle.
Yes.
All right. Okay. Can I come with you?
You can, sure, of course.
Okay, let's do that. Or not, I'm not sure. We'll see. It's got some crazy weeks ahead coming up. But anyway, I think we should probably call it a show. So that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. Don't forget you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Longley at Tomalog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. I'm at Dominic on, what is that thing called? Threads. Everyone jumped on it last week and then right. Everyone jumped off of it again. At least in the EV community. There's a lot of other people still on there, but the EV community has got such a strong Tesla component. I think it's like firmly ensconced in Twitter for now, but I'm still over there on Threads. And you can talk to me. And Tom was there. I saw you threaded yesterday. This could be a better word for that. But anyway, click subscribe. Tap that bell icon for notifications. Thank you all very much for joining us. And we'll see you again next week. Ciao. Thank you.